powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
I'm not
proud
of what I did today. I'd like to personally apologize to
both
of you.
Bump and I clearly got the memo.
Right.
So disappointed.
Well, a happy Teal Tuesday to everyone.
Who recognizes it?
I unfortunately forgot. Yeah.
To all those celebrating.
A happy Teal Tuesday to all of those who observe. Normally, I would be one of the three people in this room who are observing Teal Tuesday. Unfortunately, I forgot that it was Tuesday. I am not wearing teal. Curtis and Bump obviously wearing teal today. And I have now maybe cursed the Mariners.
They won yesterday.
They won yesterday.
That's big.
That's true. That's big. They've only lost once on a Teal Tuesday. And honestly, I'm not claiming that. otherwise, they've done nothing but win on Teal Tuesday. And if they lose to Oakland today, I feel like it's my fault.
Here's the thing. I literally had a black hat on. And I'm walking to my car and I go, oh, the squad. Stacy, C-Raj, I don't want to let him down. You know what I did? I turned back around, knocked on the door because my keys were already in my truck, made my son get his lazy butt up, opened that door, said, you go get my tail hat because I don't want to let my team down.
I am so sorry. look, I can be better. I will be better. My pledge to you guys, someone's going to have to wear teal. Like two times as much teal today. If someone could put on a teal shirt and a teal hat, teal shoes, just something to kind of make up the difference.
Don't apologize to us or anybody
you're listening.
Apologize to yourself.
I'd like to apologize.
You've let yourself down.
Honestly, I also want to apologize to the Seattle Mariners. I'm not going to apologize to Scott Servais personally. During the dugout, I will do so right now. I'm not proud of what happened today, but
it's okay.
From the 509, Stacy, if the Mariners lose, this is 1000% on you. There goes from the 253. There goes the season. Thanks, Stephanie. Yeah, I agree with you guys. I agree. Look, I'm going to backtrack. There is good news. Okay. The good news is we can step away from the ledge. All right.
Yes.
Yesterday we talked about what's your worry meter for the Mariners. This is after dropping 3 of 4 on the road to the Angels. Not only that, but the offense did not look good. An injury to Suarez. Julio's not in the lineup. Mitch Haniger's dealing with lower back tightness. Ty isn't really 100% again. And you're just looking at this team thinking like, I know that they're gonna make it.
Yeah,
I know they're a playoff team, but I'm scared. I'm scared. You can officially step away from it right now because let me tell you what, the bats unloaded yesterday. Let's start with Carlos Santana's grand slam.
And now the 3-1 on the way to Santana. Swing and a drive deep to left field. Moniak going back, looking up, and Grandma get out the rye bread and mustard. It is grand salami time. He did it. Carlos Santana, a grand slam here in the top of the fifth inning. And it's now the Mariners 5 and the Angels nothing.
That wasn't even his only home run of the game. Here's the second.
Here's the pitch. Swung on and a drive deep into the gap in right center field. Did he do it again? Yes, he did. Carlos Santana with his second home run game of the series. He hit 2 on Friday night. He hits 2 this afternoon. 5 runs batted in on the day for slamming Carlos Santana.
I mean, come on. There's this really cool part of a postgame where Carlos Santana, apparently it's his mom's birthday.
Yeah.
So he said he would hit a home run for her, and then he hit the second home run. And Scott Servais said, you must really love your mom.
You love your mom. Ain't nothing like the love you have for a mom. So all this is going down. I watched the first couple of innings. Then I had to do this podcast for the Seahawks with NASA Chobi Hawk Talk. Check us out. And I'm sitting there doing the podcast, and we're in the middle of a segment, and I get notifications on my phone that Santana hit a grand slam, and I like let out a little, oh, and he's like, you know, we have to do this whole segment over because you just jacked it up. I'm like, my bad, man. Like, Santana just hit his fifth of his career,
but
the third for the Mariners this year, right?
2 or 3 years,
yeah.
I think.
So, yeah, that was awesome. And that was our question, right? Who is going to step up in this moment where you don't have Cal out there.
Yeah.
You don't have Julio out there. Guys are banged up. Is Ty France going to get back to the France that we know? And of course, right, why do we doubt Santana? Like, every time we need a big play from him, it seems like he does it. So I tweeted out to you, and you didn't respond. Another thing, you're just big-leaguing us, man. First, you don't wear the teal.
She only responds to blue checks.
You don't respond. Exactly. Don't respond to my tweet.
Yeah, I got my settings where it's only verified accounts and other celebrities.
Got you. You're supposed to help me with that. Still hadn't worked out. But
yeah.
I tweeted out the worry meter is in the closet now. It's in the closet.
And you're exactly right. And the best thing is it wasn't just Santana. Ty France also got involved with a three-run jack.
Weiss set. He delivers to Ty. Swung on, smoked to center field, hammered. Sierra back at the track looking up. Fly ball, fly, gone. What a day for Ty France. Three-run blast.
I mean, it was also really good to see Ty get back out there. It's not that he had been really struggling, but it's that Ty France, pre-All-Star, Ty France before injuring his wrist was fantastic. Then he went through a little bit of a slump. He said that it wasn't the wrist. It was just kind of like a mental thing. He just needs to get out of his own head. Then he popped back. Then he was looking great.
Yeah.
And then fell back into a little bit of a slump. But I agree with Curtis. You mentioned this, but Bump, I'll let you go here, that as soon as he gets going and when he finds the right swing, one of the most important players on your team without no hesitation whatsoever.
He's the glue, right? You have these big personalities. You have these guys who are going to hit monster home runs. Congrats to Ty. I think he tied his career high when it comes to home runs with 20 this year. But he's the glue to this whole thing. He's the guy who was getting us through the tough times when we didn't feel like we had a chance to make the playoffs. And Curtis, you mentioned something. He switched something up with his swing. He changed something up.
Yeah, him and hitting coach Jared DeHart after the game, or Ty France, had mentioned it in his postgame comments about them adjusting his swing and seeing some differences.
Yeah, it felt good. There was a couple minor adjustments we made, setup wise and swing wise, and it kind of paid off. It was just a timing thing and a direction thing.
Which, I mean, if you look at him over the last 2 months, really since the All-Star break, you can tell something's been off, and maybe it's the wrist injury that has made him, it made his timing off. But look, to make those changes and to see results almost immediately yesterday, that is encouraging.
Of course, that was those were really the only good things to happen from this game. Oh, just kidding. Logan Gilbert also had 11 strikeouts.
Gilbert from the stretch stares in the 2-2. Swing and a miss. He got him. A four-seamer that he zips right on past Theis. Walter has been here all day, and he has been mean. Strikeout number 11 for Logan Gilbert, a career high. And he sits down the Angels again, only one run allowed in six innings. A dynamite day for Logan Gilbert.
I think you mean Walter. Ty France corrects us.
It's Walter, it's not Logan, it's Walter. No, he's just a competitor. I don't think you really pay attention to that kind of stuff. I think when he takes the mound, he's just going to go out and do what he does, and he just dominates. And, it's easy and fun to play behind him because, he's going to go out and throw his fastball at 100 and blow it by guys. And, it makes our job a lot easier. So, he's got, that competitive side that, when we need him, he's going to come out.
Ty France also doubling as a forklift operator after the game.
I would love it if there was a forklift just lowering him to the ground. You don't know it, but all Mariners postgame interviews take place in Home Depot.
Ty is the one that loads the bags onto the bus to take him to the airport.
They're like, look, you can't just be a hitter, okay? We need you to do something else here, Ty. So that's, it's really nice. You got a utility kind of guy, but for the team.
Does a little bit of everything.
He does a little bit of everything. Yeah. It was really fantastic to see that kind of day from Logan. We're going to get into this conversation later, but Bump, certainly making the conversation about your third starter in a playoff series very interesting.
Yeah, and it's nice that we have this problem, this issue. Like, who's going to be the third guy? When and if these guys get into the playoffs? Is it going to be Kirby? Is it going to be Logan? Right now, it's day by day, start by start, right?
Which is good.
Yeah, that's a great problem to have. You go out there, he has 11 Ks, a career high. 10 was career high. He goes, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and get one more for you. Throw 11 K on there. And it gives you reassurance that in some places, this team is starting to peak at the right time. You need to see little indicators that you're moving in the right direction. Yesterday's indicator, Ty France, looking smooth, going yard. Logan Gilbert doing his thing. And then Santana coming in and being the clutch guy that we know him to be. Not going to get on base a lot, not going to square that ball up and get on base. But one thing we can count on, man, he's just clutch. So little things you need to see from teams making this push into the playoffs to make you put that worry meter in the closet like I did yesterday.
I'm just still thinking of Ty France as either like a loading the team bags onto the bus or
literally a
warehouse guy. They're like, where's Ty? Oh, he's in the warehouse.
He's forklift certified Ty France. Yeah.
Guarantee he was a construction worker at some point for Halloween.
Oh, in a former life, Ty France was 1,000% an employee at Home Depot. Like, I love Home Depot, man. That's the dream job. If you're there right now, congratulations.
Congrats.
I'm very jealous.
You made it.
God, guys, I just logged on to the stream. Where's Stacey's teal? Look. I said I was sorry.
Answer the question, Stacey.
I forgot it at home. I forgot it at home. The sweater's in the laundry anyways. You guys are wearing teal. Everyone at home is wearing teal. It's Teal Tuesday. They will be fine.
I'm going to hook you up. I think your headphones have a little bit of teal.
That counts.
So
that counts.
There you go. There's your teal.
Curtis is trying to take it away from me. He's thinking of a joke. He's thinking of a way to make this not count. Curtis, it has to count or the Mariners aren't going to win, and I'm not ready to bear that responsibility or blame.
Maybe you should have thought of that before showing up today without teal.
Yeah, well... Look, I apologize to the Mariners. They're going to have to play extra hard today to make up for me cursing them.
And you can't do that in baseball. Can't play extra hard.
Man,
I feel real
stupid.
That's okay.
As a reminder for you guys, we have an all-Mariners show from 1 to 2 today. We're obviously going to get to the Mariners before then, but from 1 to 2, beginning with the Scott Service show at 1 p.m., Shannon Dreyer is going to join us for that
1:30 today.
Scott Service show today at 1:30, but beginning at 1 p.m., it is the Dugout. Shannon Dreyer is going to join us. All-Mariners every single Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. We're obviously going to take a look ahead to this game, but mostly... Now that we're pretty comfortable doing so, I mean, it's not confirmed, it's not clinched, but we get to start talking about like playoff scenarios and.
Isn't it crazy what a day does?
Yeah, I know.
We were so shook yesterday.
That's exactly what it is. Yesterday, we were like, when are you worried? When do you start panicking? Today, we're like, all right, let's start talking about if you want the first wild card seed, if you want the third one, you know, do you want the fourth seed overall? Where do you go here? And we're just not even worried about it. I think this team could take on the Astros. I'm not worried about it. It's crazy. 24 hours. The way for the Mariners for us to ensure the Mariners take off offensively is to doubt them the day before. This is now the second time that's
how we
happened.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, honestly. I'll take the responsibility for the win in that case. I'll go ahead and take that one. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Teela Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, Tom Brady reportedly set to take a personal day every Wednesday during the football season. What's the real headline?
Taking a page from Brock Huard on Fridays.
Oh, man. What's interesting about this? Yeah, shots fired.
Love you, broccoli.
Shots fired. What's crazy about this? Wednesday. It's like our Monday is your off day. Tuesday, you do a little install.
Yeah.
Wednesdays, you get going. I would expect him to take the Tuesday off because he can install himself, right? He's a smart guy, quarterback for 20-plus years. Wednesday is interesting. I'm telling you, it's Giselle. Giselle's like, look, I want Wednesday. What day do you work the most? Yeah, I want that day. You make sure you're home with the kids on Wednesday, sir. That's exactly
what it is. Now Giselle's trying to see how far she can push him.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to check it out. I love that. I love that, Giselle. I hope it is what's happening. I was really surprised. Tuesday's normally the off day in the NFL for all teams, right?
Yeah.
Tuesday, normally your off day. And you're right. Wednesday's when you like really start with your prep,
you
start
out
for
there.
Your look ahead. Like that's
get
the beginning of your week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess this is the level you have to get to. No one else will ever reach it. I feel pretty confident saying that. To be able to be like, yeah, I'm going to take that day off.
I know some guys who want to get there. I ain't going to say his name, though.
Who?
Mile High, baby.
Russell Wilson?
Mile High.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson wants to get there, I think. And you know what? I may not think that he's that kind of quarterback, but he would be doing himself a disservice to not think he is in a way.
Yeah,
you
have to think that way or aspire to be that.
Can I
say? You want to be great.
Nathaniel Hackett, not looking great through two games.
It's not.
Now, some of this is on Russ. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not there are no excuses here. They needed to run the ball more in week one. I'm shocked that they didn't. They were so effective running
the
ball.
Are you shocked they didn't? They didn't
run
the ball more?
No, actually, I'm not. I'm not shocked at all.
That's why he's there.
Nathaniel Hackett, though, through two games, not looking like a great hire. Let's see if he can prove us all wrong here, and I'll be eating crow. But
I hope he turns things around personally and he calls better games, because you know you never want to see a man, you know, fade to black like that. So soon, 1 year. I only know one other guy. Jim Moore, when he was here, had 1 year and he was gone as a head. That's rough.
Curtis, can you think of anyone? You're good for this kind of stuff. Anyone who had 1 year, one and done as a head coach? I mean, there's a lot. Who was with the Texans?
David Culley.
David Culley.
You've also got, who was the guy in Arizona? Steve Wilks?
Yes, Steve Wilks.
Yeah.
And those were two really controversial firings as well, because they were men who came in and inherited bad teams,
and
were fired immediately.
What do you expect them to do with this
roster? Exactly.
You expect them to take them to the playoffs?
Yeah.
Heck no.
No, absolutely not. Those are two good examples.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. It was never really close on Monday night as the Bills blew out the Titans 41-7. What's the real headline?
Have you checked in on your Titans friend recently? Now, the Titans, let me tell you
Lefko.
What. If anyone
rough
knows
night.
Someone who is a Titans fan, it is a painful existence. Now, I know that we complain about, you're a Mariners fan, you haven't made the playoffs, and if you're a Seahawks fan, you're dealing with kind of a questionable team this year, and there's all kinds of other Saints fans, a lot of heartbreak there as well, but let me tell you what, the Titans, you are just good enough to always be relevant and never good enough to make it all worth it. That has been the story of your existence.
Thing about the Titans is, if their run game does not get going, they for sure don't have a chance. Because Ryan Tannehill's not the guy who's going to drop back and dice you up. He was 11 for 21, 17, two interceptions.
Ugh.
Derrick Henry, 13 carries for 25 yards. The thing about Derrick Henry is, if you get into the backfield and make him make a move as soon as he touches the football, it's tough on him. He's a big man. That's not his game. Once he gets by the first level and gets to that second level, that's where he is dangerous. The Buffalo Bills did exactly that. They got into the backfield, made him dance, corralled him. It was not fun to watch, but interesting to watch them neutralize such a great football player.
Yeah, tough night for anyone who had a Derrick Henry on their fantasy team.
Me.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I had Stephon Diggs and the Bills defense.
Let's
go!
I had Henry and Diggs left, and I was up by like 20 points, and boom.
I'm an ESPN fantasy. I got 184 points.
Wow.
I feel like a king.
That's impressive.
I'm going to walk away. This is the best I'll ever
do.
I'm done. I'm done playing for the year.
The 206 pointing out, how could we miss the most recent one and done head coach?
Oh, my God.
Urban Meyer.
Yes. Oh.
Wow.
He didn't even make it one. Yeah.
He was half a season and
true.
Done.
That's why we couldn't even think of him. It's like, well, does it count?
Don't worry. He's on TV making millions again.
God, Urban
Probably
Meyer,
get the Nebraska
man.
Job. Yep.
Talk about someone. Now, is he failing up or was he genuinely good in college?
Up.
He's failing up for sure.
Well, he was successful in college,
but he won a lot in college by having great coordinators around him. Also, in college,
great recruiting, that's
the thing. You're on an unequal playing field. That's not to take away from the great things that, like, a Nick Saban has done with Alabama. Not to take away from that at all. But if you're someone like Urban Meyer, well, you get your pick often of, like, great five-star recruits and four-star recruits.
And you have so much control.
Yes.
Like, you're controlling 18 to 22-year-olds. When you're in the league, these 26 to 30, 32s, they're not going for all that stuff.
Urban Meyer.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, thanks in large part to Jalen Hurts on offense and Darius Slay on defense. The Eagles breezed by the Vikings 24-7 last night. What's the real headline?
The Eagles might be for real. What do you think?
I look at Jalen Hurts. I mean, is he emerging? Is this guy finally figuring it out? I mean, you have A.J. Brown over there. You have Miles Sanders. You have a good tight end in Goddard. Your defense. You got Darius Slay. Darius Slay should have had four interceptions last night. He dropped two. But he was on lock, man. He locked down a top three receiver in the league. And I'm watching. This is how you know a receiver is locked down. Simple play right here. Justin Jefferson is running a slant. When you run your slant, you're running to the right, you put your left foot in the ground, the angle that you declare is the angle you have to go to, whether you're covered or not, because the quarterback's going to throw that ball. Darius Slay was in such good position. Justin Jefferson knows better than this. He declares his angle, and then he slips behind him to try to get open. Boom, you throw an interception. Darius Slay was all over Justin Jefferson. Now, Justin's going to bounce back. He's great, right? But on Monday Night Football, Slay, first-time captain in his career, to go up against one of the best in the league and do what he did, impressive.
One of my favorite players. Did you see him post-game saying he's going to give his son one of the interception balls because his son's favorite receiver is Justin Jefferson?
I loved it.
It's just amazing. Like, here, son, I brought this for you. You said you like Justin Jefferson. Well, I've ruined his night. You're my son. I'm your favorite player. I love Darius Slay, man. He's also someone I'm shocked. I've already said this, but I was shocked to hear he was a first-time captain. Yeah. You just think that he would have been one before. He's always such a vocal leader. Maybe I just think that because he's so active on Twitter, too. So it's like you don't have to be a fan of that team to, like, know that it's him. But
Slay is he was so composed, in great position. He looked like a real veteran out there, where Justin Jefferson looked like he was a bit overwhelmed. But Kirk Cousins didn't help him out either. Underthrown footballs, balls thrown high. I mean, Kirk Cousins looked like the guy that makes me not want to trust him every single year when it gets closer to the playoffs.
Yeah. People just texting in with their fantasy receivers now. Amon-Ra St. Brown, by the way.
Great. If you picked him up, good for you.
Congratulations.
Three Amon-Ra in NFL history.
Yo, top three Amon-Ra potentially in human history.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think that's not a stretch at all to say. He's been absolutely phenomenal because he was great last week as well, right? I don't know how many points he got in fantasy.
So here's my question for you guys real quick.
Yeah.
I had Dak Prescott as my starting quarterback.
That's unfortunate.
Boom, he's hurt. No, my backup was Trey Lance.
Oh, no.
Boom, he's hurt.
You're cursed.
So I might have to pick up my guy Jared Goff and then see what happens there.
That's interesting, Bump. That's interesting because you know who the Seattle Seahawks play in week four.
That guy.
The Detroit Lions.
Yeah. Struggling.
Interesting, interesting. There's got to be someone else available for you.
He was the highest rated quarterback left out there. I got to make a trade.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. Look for someone who has like Tua or something.
Yeah.
That could be a good kind of pickup. Those wide receivers are absolutely
Mara Dooley, I need you. Where
yeah,
you at?
Exactly. We'll find her later. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. All right. Coming up at 11, we're going to talk about which side of the ball for the Seahawks is a bigger concern for you right now. Before we get to it, though, the latest from Pete Carroll. He was on with Brock and Salk Monday morning, though this is from his press conference. So we've got new information here, including what he would have changed in this game and what the team might do moving forward. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Curtis, you want to read that little bit of information you gave us one more time with the same intro?
Yeah, you want to feel a million years old?
No, but hit me with it.
This is courtesy of our very own Brent Stecker of SeattleSports.com. He tweets out, legendary Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor is eligible for the 2023 Pro Football Hall of Fame class as a first-timer on the ballot. Cam Chancellor is already Pro Football Hall of Fame eligible. Like that, I feel old. I've never felt older.
What's the first time in your life where you were like, I feel old? And I say this, we're all in our 30s.
When I first started coaching, I got my first head coaching gig in 2015. And this past, summer, I had a beer with a bunch of the kids I coach. And I'm like,
wow.
And then two of them are married, couple kids. Yep. I'm like, goodness gracious.
Yeah. Mine was probably when the players I would interview didn't know, like they hadn't heard of certain things.
Uh-huh.
Like, but that's the same thing of talking to anyone who's like Gen Z, if you're a millennial, and there's just little tiny things they might not know about, like a Walkman or like, I don't know, certain TV shows or something.
I would say when the athletes that you watch are younger than you. Like when I was in college, you started noticing guys in like the NBA draft, the NFL draft with birth years younger than you. And it's like, wait a minute.
I'll tell you
this
what it is.
Bizarre.
No, I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's seeing that too.
Seeing
the two.
In the names, the juniors, right? Asante Samuel Jr.
Oh my God, that one blows
Gamero
my mind.
Jr. Gary Payton
Although I think Asante Samuel had his son when he was like 19 or 20.
Yeah.
So it's still, like, it's.
I think
it makes sense that you're like, okay, let me think about a 15-year difference.
Hasn't Tom Brady been teammates with Antoine Winfield and Antoine Winfield Jr.?
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Anyone born in 2000 or later, like Trey Lance was born in like 2000 or 2001.
DK Metcalf's dad, Terrence Metcalf. He's been in the league for a long time.
Enough of this. Stacey felt old when the Browns revealed their new midfield logo from 1946. Yeah, let me tell you what, It was just like seeing something from my childhood there. Pete Carroll spoke with the reporters yesterday, had quite a bit to talk about, obviously, after what was a really ugly game. Let's talk about what he wishes they would have done differently.
A little bit of everything, really. There's some real solid things, but we want to get the running game more active and part of the game. And we have to take, in this game, we needed to take what they were giving us more so. You know, they really were laying off and giving us some room. And Gino was popping the ball around. He was in good shape to throw it, and protection wasn't bad. We should have gone that way a little bit more. It's such a broken record. When you don't convert, you don't get enough chances, you know, and that's kind of, we needed more ops. And we got to create them ourselves by the execution. So we had a chance to throw the ball a little bit more than we did.
We need to take what the defense gave us. When did they not do that?
When?
It doesn't have to be specific examples, but when you're looking back and you're like, here was a persistent problem for you guys.
It's pretty much the whole game. I mean, because you look at this 49er defense, they're a 4-3 defense, so naturally they're going to have about seven guys in a box. They roll a safety down, that's eight. There's three in coverage, right? Then you hear Pete Carroll talking about, all right, they're laying off. So what does that mean? They're giving you a 5-6 yard cushion. What routes are good in 5-6 yard cushion? You got your slants, your hitches, and your outs, right? Your short stuff that you can get DK the ball real quick. DK can make a guy miss. Like, he's not going to shake you like Ken Walker did on his carry, but he'll give you a nice little move and boom, finish down the field. So taking what the defense gives you, that's what that means. And also something I want to see, because I'm watching film last night and I'm just studying the 49ers. Like, man, why are they so good at what they do? All the window dressing and Juszczyk is huge in what they do. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Nick Bolor. I'm like, he's a poor man's Juszczyk. Let's get him involved in this too, because not only does he help with the run game, he helps with that deception. It looks like it's going to be a run. Then you take advantage of what's on the back end. So I think that, in a nutshell, is what he's talking about, plus a whole bunch of other stuff that he's not going
to
tell
us. I hope Nick Bolor changes his Twitter bio to a poor man's Kyle Juszczyk. I would love to have that. Pete Carroll here talking about Geno Smith and why they need to let him loose.
You know, if there was any question of how long it would take him to get acclimated and all that, that's gone. He's clearly in command of it and poised, and we need to not hold back at all. And I kind of implied that, you know, we could have thrown the football more with the opportunities that we had, and with the trust that we have in him, we need to do that. And so you know, when it's given to us, we got to take advantage of it. And we don't have to hold back at all.
So it's kind of a combination of what he said with Brock and Salk, and then also what he said in the cut prior to this one, which is not only do we have to give what the defense, take what the defense gives us, but we need to utilize what's actually working for us right now. And right now, Geno Smith is completing 80% of his passes. Maybe we try a few more downfield shots, make the most of DK.
Yeah, and most people are going to say, Pete, don't you want to run the football? Didn't you say you wanted to lean on the run? Of course he does. But when you're playing against a defense that is just putting so many bodies in that box, that means the pass is going to be open. And you mentioned it, Stace. Geno Smith is completing 81% of his passes. He's being responsible with the football. Yes, he has one interception, but for the most part, he's being responsible. And we have all those bodies in the box. That means that there's favorable matchups on the back end, and you have a guy in DK who can win those one-on-one matchups. Take advantage of them.
All right, so a couple other things here. Let's go to defense here. This is him talking a little bit. He was asked about, like, hey, how are the linebackers transitioning to the new 3-4 front? Really interesting here thing about their biggest challenge on defense right now.
I do think that it's gonna take us a little more time than we want to get really connected really tightly against the really good offenses that are dedicated to run the football like the Niners. We learned a lot in that game. We had to. We had enough chances, and so we'll grow. But there was just some slight fits that weren't as good, and it's the connection of the guys playing up front and the backers flowing properly.
Now, if you aren't sure what he's talking about, he's talking about a little bit of those. He's talking about the gaps, talking about some issues where they are letting people slip through, and whether it's communication, whether it's a new front. Do you want to unload a little bit of that?
Yeah, so the big boys up front, their job is to occupy the bodies. You got three down linemen, so your center should be taken care of, and then your tackles and maybe your guard and your tackle on the other side. Now, what that does, it keeps bodies off of the linebackers as long as possible. Now, with a 3-4, you're going to have two guys who are going to get up to that second level as well. Mm-hmm. So now you got these one-on-ones instead of two-on-ones, these combination blocks. Flowing properly, perfect example of that. There was a pitch called by the 49ers. That means they're trying to get outside of that tackle, right? And there are a couple of times where Cody and Jordan flew so hard to that pitch that it allowed that backside guard and that placeside guard to wash them out, right? So they're flowing to the left. The guard's like, I'm going to take you to the left. And now this cutback lane is open and their shoulders are turned, right? They're not keeping their shoulders parallel to the sideline so they can fight those guys. So it's a combination, right? Bigs got to get bodies on bodies. The linebackers cannot flow too hard. And then to help out those linebackers, whoever has contained the furthest guy on the outside, a lot of the times it was a corner or a safety because the Niners play such a compact game. They got to force everything back inside so those linebackers are ready. So it's all connected. It's not just one guy messing things up.
We were talking about things that that when you kind of realize you're old. I'm wrapping it up. We're wrapping up here, but just a final thought from the 206 on the Mac and Jack's text line. My high school coach's son was a toddler running around the field when I was a senior in high school. He just started at quarterback for O'Day last year as a senior. That'll do it. Yep. Is anyone you remember as a kid, suddenly you see them and they're like 18. You're, what happened to you? What? Where'd you go? All right, you guys. I want to... Obviously, we're going to talk about which side of the ball is the bigger concern. That's coming up at 11. Brady Henderson's going to join us at noon. So we had a lot of fun Seahawks things coming your way. We're going to have two burning Mariners questions coming up at 11:45. Before then, though, I have something that is really bothering me. I went on ESPN last night. I saw something on the front page, and I started getting pretty angry. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, why is Seattle's looking to recognize a woman in our community with the launch of the Women of Inspiration Award? And they've narrowed the nominations down to four finalists. So head to womenofinspirationseattle.org to vote today. Polls close September 22nd. That is womenofinspirationseattle.org. Bump.
What up?
And Curtis, we here at Seattle Sports Station, certainly on the Bump and Stacy Show, we're fans of the Mets. Not like Mets fans, but the Mets are a likable enough organization, would you say? Right?
Yeah, I can get like with
it. The Mets, the Jets, the Islanders, the good people version of the Yankees. I'll exclude the Giants, who are horrible. Like, I'll allow it, right? So congratulations to the Mets. They've officially qualified for the postseason for the first time in 6 years. They're a very good team, one of the best teams in baseball, certainly one of the best teams in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say behind the Dodgers and, I mean, gosh, a better record than the Braves right now, I believe. That's why they clinched. So certainly one of the best teams. The other day when they clinched, I went on ESPN, as I do every single night, to read through the articles and figure out what we want to talk about the next day. And I thought, gosh, I feel so happy for the Mets and their fans making the postseason for the first time in 6 years. But it made me wonder if, when the Mariners make it this year, it'll also be on the front page of ESPN or Yahoo Sports or whatever the way it was for the Mets. And I know that this is preemptively getting angry about something that hasn't happened yet, right? Mm-hmm. Am I falling into this typical trap, the Curtis-esque East Coast bias trap, where nothing has actually happened yet? The Mariners haven't been ignored yet, and here I am just preemptively getting mad. But even then, I don't feel like enough attention is being paid to the fact that the Mariners are about to make the playoffs and end the longest playoff drought, not in baseball, but in North American professional sports, not just the NBA, not just the NFL, in professional sports in the continent. It's 20 years, rounding it on 21. The next closest in the NBA is the Sacramento Kings with 15. That outpaces the next closest draft by 5 years. The Jets are 10 years in the NFL. Everyone looks at them and thinks, oh, poor Jets. The second longest in baseball is the Phillies at 10 years. It has been twice as long for the Mariners. And I feel like it's a feel-good story. But this should be news. This is what sports are made of. One of the best parts of sports is the underdog story and watching something improbable or fun happen. It's why we all loved watching the Giants defeat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl, and why everyone outside of New York hates the Yankees. The Mariners making the playoffs is a story made for baseball. So why aren't I hearing about it and reading about it more often?
Say it with your chest.
You said you love watching the Giants beat the Patriots twice.
Yeah, that's right.
You mentioned the Mets getting a whole bunch of love.
I sure did.
You mentioned Sacramento Kings kind of being ignored with that. I didn't even know
Correct.
That until you said something.
Correct.
There's something that these teams have in common. They're on the East Coast. that people don't really care. It's almost like when it comes to baseball especially, that if you are not in the Eastern time zone, then you don't really matter because it's America's pastime. Yes, we know the East Coast has been here far longer than the West Coast, right? We were the last frontier when it comes to the manifest destiny, right? So naturally, we get ignored. Like even if you go to the East Coast and you look at the buildings, it's old. Everything just feels old out there. Everything feels a bit brand new here. So
yeah, but y'all burn witches. I mean, like
going witch hunts and all that.
Yeah.
Unforgivable.
We don't get the validation.
I'm just saying,
we don't get the validation
out here.
They look at the Mariners and they're like, oh, man, they are a good team. They are doing something cool over there. But because you don't get the eyes that you get on the East Coast, that's what it's all about. It's all about people, the masses tuning in and tradition and the history of the game. So naturally, those eyes are going to shift towards all the teams you just talked about. I mean, goodness gracious, the Giants get more pub. The Giants are garbage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about the eyes. And because our games come on late, they start at 6:40. That's 9:40 on the East Coast. People are like, I'll read about it. But you're not going to read about it. And ESPN's not going to pub me.
No one reads anymore.
The only time you see the Mariners on ESPN is when they just show the standings. Like, I hardly see any highlights of the Mariners out there. So it's all about the eyes. It's all about the money. And unfortunately, we don't get eyes out here.
And I'll say this. Half of it is a bed the Mariners have made themselves. When you don't make the playoffs for 20 years, what do? You make yourself irrelevant. You can't go out there and complain that no one's paying attention to you when you play your games in a late window and when you haven't made the playoffs. That's partly on you.
Yeah.
Right? Not on fans. On the Mariners.
Yeah, for sure.
That being said, that's being broken right now. I mean, they have 99% odds to make the postseason. I know that things could fall apart. They haven't clinched a spot, and knock on wood, that doesn't happen. And they are able to clinch a spot and go, hopefully, in this next home series. But this should be something everyone is watching. I saw that story about the Mets and thought, man, good for them. What a fun team to root for. They're so stinking good. Their owner's willing to spend money. They are willing to go out there and compete with the best teams. That's a really cool story. Now, the Mariners are never going to be a top six team in spending as much as I would like for them to be. Oh, they should be higher. They're 20-something, and they're the 12th biggest metropolitan market. I mean, like, you could certainly spend more money.
All right, well, let's take care of business then. Let's take care of business. Let's say we take care of business this season and make it into the playoffs, right? Maybe that people are forced to look at us now, right? You got to force the issue sometimes. And for 21 years, we haven't forced that issue. You mentioned haven't spent a lot of money, haven't been into the playoffs. Force these eyes. You get into the playoffs, they have to watch you play.
From the 206, Stacy, let me cut you off. People don't care like we do. But listen to me. This isn't a West Coast story. This isn't a Seattle story. This isn't a Washington State story. This is a baseball story. This is a really cool sports story. Right? This is like, I'm not saying the Mariners are movie material. I'm not saying they're going to get to a World Series and upset everyone in baseball. But what I'm saying is, what's our favorite thing about sports stories? Right? The underdog story, the surprise, the heroes you root for. I mean, part of what makes the Mariners season so cool and what makes this story about them breaking their drought so cool is that that's everything we love about sports. So why aren't we seeing it more often? I feel like by not focusing on the Mariners, you're not really letting other people outside of Seattle, outside of Washington State, see something really cool happen, which is a team that has fallen into irrelevance for two decades, for a generation. Finally getting a chance to enter the dance.
Oh, yeah.
And metaphorically speaking, of course, not quite March Madness, but I digress.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like it's not a Mariner story. It's not a Seattle story. It's a story that should be dominating baseball headlines along with all the other dominant teams that are going to be great, that are going to go on to the World Series, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Mets in there. I get it. But man, this is a really cool baseball story in 2022. Where are the headlines?
They gone. They not. Hey, don't worry about us. Keep sleeping on us. We'll be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Force them to watch. I feel you, Stace. I feel you.
All right, anyways. That's my say it with your chest.
Say it with your chest.
Where you got to say something, you just got to get it off your chest. It's making you angry. We're going to get back to the Seahawks here. What side of the ball is a bigger concern for you right now for the Seahawks? Offense or defense? That's next.